Okay, what we're doing again, we're looking at Sophia in thoughts, and we're going to look at Sophia in dreams, and then we're going to look at how the study guide is organized, and then we'll start with the book. That won't probably be for a couple of weeks. I really want to give you a grounding in the conceptual and the practical understanding of this stuff before we tackle the book, because if you started the book, you realize it's not easy at all. I think it's one of this and Mysterium are probably the two hardest books in the field. Okay, over to 36 in the study guide. The idea we're working with now, I try to develop the idea slowly, is that there is such a thing as meaning in external events. Is everybody happy with that idea? That's Sophia. That's another way of calling Sophia. So on top of 36, still doing von Franz's thinking about Sophia, so to speak. The idea that, top paragraph, the idea that meaning lies concealed in events themselves was, as Richard Wilhelm has shown, predominant in earliest Chinese culture. Top of page 36 in the study guide.
Bottom of 35.
Huh?
No. Mine's the top of 36.
Okay.
Top of 36? Am I off here?
No.
The idea that meaning?
Okay, mine's bottom of 35.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
Oh, did you print it yourself on your computer, right? Instead of
yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, dear. Yeah. Well, that shouldn't have happened.
I have
this Adobe converter. I put it in PDF file, and it always messes up the pages.
It always does,
doesn't it?
It always does. Anytime I try to email a client something in advance, when I get there, it's never.
I guess I should do it in Word next time.
Huh. I don't know. I have trouble with
trouble with Word too.
Does it matter really?
A different PDF driver. I mean, if you're using a PDF driver, that's
a
separate program
nearby. But if it's close to
matter in Word,
yeah, I don't think it does.
Doesn't matter anyway. Huh? Well, so if I give you pages for a study guide, if you downloaded it, you
I
still got extra copies of the study guide if you want one. Now, by the way, we have a new member, Carol. Say hi, Carol.
Hi, Carol.
This is everybody.
You get to know her.
That's an easy name to remember. Everybody.
Everybody one, everybody two, everybody three, everybody four. So, 36. The idea that meaning lies concealed in events themselves was that Richard Wilhelm, remember Richard Wilhelm? He's the guy that brought back the I Ching. He's the sinologist that Jung meant so much to Jung. He was a German Protestant missionary to China who bragged that he never converted a single Chinese. And just loved Chinese culture, and he brought back to Jung that secret of the golden flower, which was so important to Jung, and he brought back the I Ching, which many of you know. It was, as Richard Wilhelm has shown, a predominant earliest Chinese culture. Now, going back to that Pali stuff, the other image he dreamt about was Chinese women. So it looks like the Chinese feminine and Sophia have something in common. And it is this idea that meaning and consciousness isn't only our possession. Chinese don't have trouble with that. We have trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
So when things get rough, what we often do then, we go to other cultures and see, has anyone else ever thought like this? And sure enough, they have.
And why are we so amazed that we didn't think of it first?
Because we're arrogant.
Yeah.
We also come across it in the West in Heraclitus' conception of Logos. Heraclitus is one of these early philosophers. You don't have to worry about that. To mention one example. Again, you don't have to worry about the example. Another version of this view is to be found in Aristotelian idea of the nous poeticos, the active nous is mind and poeticos is active. An active intelligence inherent in the physical universe, okay, what we've just said now in different words, which is secondarily manifest in the human soul as their natural light and is capable of influencing man's thinking. Now, this just plays with it backwards. Rather than saying we have this capacity to generate knowledge in ourselves through the archetypes production of dreams, and look, it also exists in reality, this view says that's the fundamental reality. and we just partake in it. Just it just flips the thing around. But the idea is there's this similarity in the capacity of the world and of our soul to generate meaningful images.
So that difference from Aristotle's notion of entelechy, which seems to be much more personal, the notion of entelechy, which is like an inborn fullness that everybody carries with them.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that, Tom. Whether that extends to... I think that extends to objective to natural processes as well, but I don't know.
Okay,
now I'm just going back to different passages, hearing the same phrase again, and the same idea again and again in different phrases. In his work on synchronicity, Jung cites a number of other thinkers, both ancient and medieval, who believed in a correspondentia, that's the medieval way of putting it, correspondence, or sympathy of all things, whose meaning lay hidden in objective phenomena of the outer world, and could be integrated with the help of mantic, that is to say, oracular procedures. So what we try to do when we throw an oracle is capture that. That's not so important for our purposes at the moment. One more phrase. Go down. Jung describes genuine synchronistic phenomena as parapsychological marginal phenomena, which are only observable when our ego consciousness becomes dimmed. This would mean that the luminosity of a constellated archetype, just a different word for the same thing, which shines forth in the meaning of a synchronistic event, increases its energy charge and so on. The key word there is luminosity of a constellated archetype. The knowingness of whatever it is that creates these images in us and outside of us. And again, why am I doing this? Because that is one way to talk about what Sophia is. So you're getting a feeling, Sophia, hopefully, she combines two principles in one person, the material and the spiritual. They're not separating her. And we'll be making a great deal of that. There's a little bit to your question, Elena. It's an aspect of God which is in the world. If you're using religious language. Jung doesn't necessarily use that language, but we can if it's meaningful to you. Okay, last quote, and let's go back to page 35. Go down the line, then a paragraph, where it starts, although the non-perceptual potential...
Are you sure you mean 35?
Well, sorry, 34. Mm-hmm. Although the non-perceptual continuum... Okay, the non-perceptual potential continuum. Now, what's that?
Supersensible world?
Yeah, it's the world beyond time and space in which we hypothesize the continuous story of your life resides as a potential. Or, another word, unus mundus, one world. Appears to exist outside time. It isn't conditioned by the events in your life. It conditions the events in your life. Certain dynamic manifestations of it break through into our ordinary temporal sphere in this form of synchronistic occurrences. So that transcendental world exists as a potentiality. It's what we're trying to realize. We ascend to it, so to speak, when we do dream work, try to find out who are we really, what's our real story. And at certain moments, it descends, so to speak, to us in these synchronistic events. It comes to us. We don't always have to go to it. And when it descends, we see the pattern of our being mirrored in the events of daily life. In the case of that young woman, she is to be a writer. And that's what that physical event was telling her. Okay, that's Sophia in thoughts. Are you happy? Well, next I want to talk about Sophia in dreams. We probably won't get through them all today. I brought along 10 dreams to show you the subtleties in dream symbolism which try to convey this fact. After that, I will describe you how the study guide is laid out, I will describe you how the book is laid out, and then we will start the book. So we'll probably get to the book second hour next time. But I want to spend a good, maybe an hour or maybe even two on Sophia dreams. So having given you some conceptual grasp and the barest of images to recognize Sophia, the two images I've given you so far are starlight and the dual circle, dual mandala. We'll be looking at many, many more, and that's the substance of the course, looking at all these images that the text uses to really circumscribe her. Here comes some dreams. First is a dream of mine. I had one going through a tough time. Dream goes like this. It is night. I'm in a rural area, which is extremely dark. Sophia is always associated with these dark, despairing, depressing times. I'm in a rural area which is extremely dark. No city lights. I look up at the sky and see the stars are particularly bright, exceptionally clear. I have never been in a place this dark and have never been able to see the stars so plainly. I can make out the definiteness of their constellations in a way that I had not noticed before. I observed their different patterns, which are very pronounced and almost seem to be in the stars themselves. No wonder the ancients saw images in the heavens. The brilliance of the starry night sky with its forms is magnificent. I had this dream before I had any clue about Sophia and starlight. But there I was going through a tough time, a dark time, and one sees these patterns then when the light of the city, which is what everyone else is saying you should be, is dimmed. Dream of a female. I see one frame of a paper card being constructed of different pieces. The pieces come together and a woman's life is changed, transformed. Her psyche's transformation is completed when the last piece, a dark oval ellipse at the bottom, is dropped into place. Then I hear a voice saying, "My dear Katie, as you proffer your special sound, concentrate on its physicality." The background of this card and the ellipse are made of starry night cardstock. A salmon-colored circle is at the top, and out of it shines a salmon-colored beam of light, terminating in the dark oval. And the dreamer very kindly gave me permission to pass around pictures of the dream. You want to pass it around? Okay, do you want to try it? Where's the Sophia image? Starry night. Right. What do you make of that salmon?
Fish.
Yeah, what's swimming? What's the swimming do?
Swim.
How do they swim?
Upstream.
So if you are aware of your individuality, what is ahead of you? Swimming upstream.
Swim against the flow.
Swim against the flow. Right.
That's encouraging.
We could say more about the details, but I think you got the main idea. Unless you want to ask about anything in particular.
Gary?
Oh, that one back there. Pretty much what we talked about. Swimming against streams.
This reminds me of that image on the cover, Number and Time.
No, I don't remember that image.
Just a real faint sort of abstract.
I'll have to look at that.
Tower. I can't picture it clearly.
You had the paperback, did you? Version of the book?
Yeah, I think...
I had the hardback. I'm not sure they had a picture.
Oh, okay.
But I'd like to see the dust cover. Yeah, if I kept it. I think I kept it. Now those two weren't so hard. This is a little tricky. Maybe I'll give you a hint so you don't get totally lost. If you look at the mythology of board games, Monopoly, going back to their original checkers and so on, very often in the primal mind, it was thought that that board game reflected and divinized, was an oracle, for the actions of the gods in the heavens. So when people played games, that was a reflection of what the gods were doing in heaven. That was the original primal idea. I found this description of chess. I'm taking chess then as an example of this board game archetype, so to speak. This is from Number and Time, page 296. Chess comes from India. Originally, chess seems to have represented an earthly mirror image of the stars' battles in heaven, an outline of those battles from which man's destiny proceeded. Because of this, chess also provided a divinatory technique for the living. The victor's moves in this game were noted because they were taken to indicate harmony with Tao. So, see, that's what we've been talking about, these two dimensions. This God's realm of activity, and then the actions of the board game would be the actions in time and space. And in the primal mind, the board game was thought to express that link. So when the unconscious uses the idea of a board game, you have to flip your mind now into that symbolic way of thinking about the board game. So the board game is going to be, therefore, an image of Sophia. Hopefully you can see that. But you don't realize this stuff, that these archetypal themes lie behind these very simple images until you plow back into the anthropology, so to speak, of the particular image. So this dream, the reason I explain that is because this dream is about board games. So this dream is going to be about Sophia, with a twist. In the first two dreams, Sophia was really present as a sort of offering to the dreamer. Sometimes Sophia is present as a problem. And here we're going to see it's the problem to be solved. I'm in this warehouse. The dreamer is female. That's all I need to know for the moment. I'm in this warehouse. I'll call the dreamer Susan, by the way. It's not her real name. I'm in this warehouse. I'm very young and short, like a kid or midget. There's this man who's a scammer. He's wearing a suit coat with tails from the 1800s. I think of Dickens' pickpocket teams. He's scooping up these games that sit on this tarp, draped over bleachers. I sort of follow him around, taking a game or two, but I just don't get what's going on. I see some other boys grabbing games like mad, and I figure out that there is a free-for-all for these things. The more games you can collect, the more you win. I hate this type of contest. It is too aggressive for me. I start to slink away, wanting to leave unnoticed. I'm different now. I am wearing a black top and tan or khaki slacks. Conservative, sophisticated. I see Terry. Terry's a female friend of the dreamer. She greets me in a very friendly way. The other girls in this group are like Terry, dressed in white t-shirts and sloppy pants. I see John on a stool. He sees me. I feel shy. I don't want to be a nerd, though. They are talking about driving somewhere. John says we can all fit in one car. Susan, meaning the dreamer, will sit on my lap. I don't say anything, which I know encourages John. I just sort of smile and shyly look down. Some of the people start to get up. Terry was sitting by John's knees on the floor by his stool. She gets up and in a familiar way knees him in the groin because he said something offensive. I was astounded. He didn't get mad and she wasn't really that offended. I could tell they remained friends and I felt jealous for this kind of tough intimacy with friends who like each other. I'm different again. This time I'm a slender teenage girl who's hanging out on the city streets with these two tougher girls. These girls are smoking cigarettes. Me, I never smoked before now, but I feel the need to learn to smoke. I have these thin brown lady cigarettes, which you start your addiction with and then move up to regular cigarettes. There was like two of me in this dream. One was the girl taking a puff on this brown cigarette and feeling like I could get the hang of smoking. And the other me was the observer me trying to stop this teen girl's spiral downward into a life of addiction. Do you want to try it? The first image, which I think is so pregnant with meaning, is that the dreamer is watching all these people manically scooping up board games. And the more board games they get, steal, really, the happier they are. And she's disgusted. Yeah,
we did in the play. So that, but if anybody else has ideas, I'll let them. But otherwise, they are trying to control their own fate.
Right.
And their gravity.
See, that's modern life. Mm-hmm. That's the secular. The dreamer was involved in kind of a high power business. That's the secular, business driven deal closing mentality of our time, which goes to these deals like a board game, thinking if this thing can be controlled and made mine, then I am God. I am controlling fate. And it seems to me it shows the repressed or denied Sophia behind modern greed. We're trying to control that board game, get that board game for myself, rather than enter into a playing of that board game in which one hears what the larger pattern is and then tries to have one's moves develop correspondingly. So at this point, the dreamer was working in this high power business situation and was sick of it.
But the tarp covered up what was a monster. Yeah, because it kept them from seeing what they were doing.
Right. Okay. Right. A religious act is turned into a secular game of acquisition. Then she sees, now you need some association. John is a guy she knew from where she was raised and was sort of a bit of a hoodlum kind of guy, tougher character. And Terry was likewise a tough girl. The dreamer was raised in the city, large city. And so these are some pretty streetwise, tough characters. Right. But look at her relationship to them. She's separate from them. So you see, she's separate from her own toughness. And if you make a decision, I am not going to take part in the game which secularizes the sacred dimension of life. I'm not going to live out my need for a dialogue with a higher power by closing one business deal after the other as a sense of power, to give me a sense of power, then you got to be tough. Because everybody will tell you you're crazy. And see, the dreamer at this point does not yet have that toughness. It would correspond in the previous dream to the salmon. Remember the salmon going against the stream to hear your individual pattern. In this dream, the individual pattern is Sophia is depicted as the chess game or the board game, which she doesn't want to try to possess. She wants to find another way to live, but the toughness at the point of this dream isn't there. And so the dream ends with this spiraling down into despair.
But was she taller in the second one? Because she was short to start with, like she was starting to take it.
Well, she's getting bigger, but she's still in that second paragraph not big enough to fight the battle to all those voices that tell you you should be involved in this money game.
Well, and the characters later draw her in to smoking. And
which is a regressive ending. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she wants to leave the collective game, but she doesn't have the strength at this point. So you see, Sophia can be an offering, or it can be a challenge.
I did a workshop up in with addiction that Sophia or the mother aspect being a part of the addiction, the negative. Is that the root of addiction? Not the root, but it's part of
I would say the repression of Sophia would be at the root of addiction. You see why I say that? Because in the dream, when those guys are my guys, because it was basically a man's business, are trying to control their fate by playing the business game rather than understanding the religious dimension of the dialogue. When you are doing that, you're repressing Sophia. And she, in a way, by not having the strength to get out of that, I mean, she eventually will, but this is when it first appears. She doesn't have the strength to find the standpoint that can honor Sophia. And not having the strength to honor Sophia is behind the addiction in the dream.
Marian, would you say that whatever the addictive substance is the concretized form of the repressed Sophia?
Yeah.
And so if you can bring that into your life,
right,
then you don't need that concrete.
Right. Form. Can you see how that applies in the fact that the business game is... I'll wait for you to get back to since it's your question.
What did you say? The addiction was what? The concrete...
The addiction... The substance that the person is addicted to is a concretization of what is needed on another level.
Concretization. I can see what it's something that's needed on another level, but what's that word again?
Concretization.
It's a physical form.
Physical
embodied on another level.
It's a literal form uh-huh. of what is needed symbolically or metaphorically.
Okay. But in waking life, what is needed is bad. Whereas in other words, if the addiction is cigarettes, it's bad. If that's what's needed, but it's not what's needed. In a higher form, is not bad.
Right. On the low form, it's destructive.
Uh-huh.
On the higher form, it's creative.
It represents something good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I think with the in this dream, you can see that, what the world is addicted to is trying to make life a game on a low level. When you understand what gaming is on a higher level, which is a dialogue with the divine powers, it's a healthy thing.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. No.
So is this just in a dream, though? The addiction in a dream is a substance of a concretization of what is needed on another level?
No, it's in reality, too.
Then how do you know, I guess just by studying your dreams, you figure out what it means?
Right. Somehow it's not too hard to figure out.
What are some of the ones that Woodman talks about? I know alcoholism, she said, was a longing for spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And what she had some other ones. I did.
It was her thing, because that was her.
Right. And that was
addiction.
Light, wasn't it, in control?
Well, that's she wanted to be spirit there.
Right.
She just wanted to get lighter and lighter. Right?
Lightness, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you can always name exactly what they are. I think you have to bring them through your own story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my understanding of it. It will vary depending on whose addiction it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, like with all this, you can probably look at some some probable meanings.
Right.
But it's always dangerous.
It's in the ballpark.
Yeah. I think of food, for example. You know, the Bushmen, when they see you, they will say, sort of a ritual greeting, I have seen you looming up from afar, and I am dying of hunger. That's their greeting. And
that's a powerful greeting. That might scare me off a little bit. Cannibal.
What by hunger they mean is hunger of the soul. And if you ask them, they will distinguish between the big hunger, which is the hunger of the soul, and the small hunger, which is the hunger for food. So there you can see that a food addiction could be a hunger for that food for the soul. And God knows there's plenty precious little food for the soul in our daily living. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you would agree, but as I watch the Donald Trump show from time to time, it strikes me. He keeps talking about the people who have too much feeling function, who too much interrelatedness, that that's bad and evil, and that they're not going to get along. It seems to me that's a lot of that base level of the competition, the driven world, but he amplifies that. He's an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't relate here. You can't have friends here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do one another in. You got to be the toughest. Mm-hmm. Isn't it partially the same way?
That's exactly his dream.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the classic chessboard stealer,
yeah,
or game stealer. Close the deal, playing that game of acquisition is a substitute for that dialogue which the game represents on another level. Yeah. Classic example. Okay. I got the other one here, but we'll come back to that later maybe. What do you make of this one? Dream of another woman. I'm sitting in the stands of some sort of sporting event. I think. I have my black jacket with me. I lift it up and see that it has yellow paint all over the back of it. It's the same color as some of the stars I'm painting on the wall of my niece's nursery. I'm a little surprised because none of the paint was visible from the front of the jacket. So I didn't know it was there. I think to myself that I've been meaning to get rid of that jacket, and I really do need to because it doesn't fit anymore. I stuff it down beside my seat. So she's got a jacket with stars painted on the inside, all over the back of it.
Oh, I missed that part.
I was about to see that it has yellow paint all the way back of it. It's the same color as some of the stars I'm painting on the walls of my niece's nursery.
Oh, the jacket doesn't have stars.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it does. Okay.
And she has to get rid of the jacket.
Persona.
Yeah, you see, that those star patterns aren't the real stars. That's the pattern of her life, which she has probably inherited from upbringing. And that's what she has been living, and now she realizes she's got to get rid of it.
She's at a sporting event, which is a collective. I mean, she discovers this in the midst of a collective competition.
Right. Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you to have strong stomachs, because these next two are kind of graphic.
A lot of body fluids.
Definite body fluids.
Not my favorite.
Can you deal with it?
Can you raise your voice?
I know.
I thought you were the worst of that.
I never liked all that conversation.
You'd never make it as a nurse.
No,
or a therapist.
I knew I would never make it as a nurse either. But a therapist, you just listen to it. But a nurse, your hands are at it.
Now, I'm going to read you two dreams. We may not get through them all today. But again, it's a subtlety. And let me describe the situation first. The dreamer had just finished an adulterous affair in which she had been in a loveless, sexless marriage, and she thought she was just undesirable. And she met this guy, and they had a terrifically passionate relationship, which, however, of course, ended badly. She got burnt. And but she discovered two things. One, that she was and is a desirable woman physically, and that she decided to change careers. So here goes. I warn you. The first one, you will not immediately see this Sophia, but because they're one night after the other, I've taken them both as having the same meaning. The second dream is more obviously about Sophia. I see a woman's ass close up. It is young and muscular and tight. I feel that she was an object for a man, and he may be getting ready, or has had, anal sex with her. Then I realize this man, who I cannot see, has put his hand into her vagina. He pulls out a huge cut diamond. Then he pulls his hand away and seems repulsed because her vaginal fluid is on his hands. She asks if he was going to have sexual intercourse with her. He says, no, if I was going to do that, I wouldn't be. Pause. Then he puts his hand back in her vagina and continues to pull on the diamond. It is attached to a silver string. And as he continues to pull on it, this multifaceted, shiny, mirrored ball comes out. Multifaceted like a disco ball or Epcot sphere. I am skeptical about its quality because it doesn't look like a real diamond. Dream goes on from there, but that's the main point for our purposes. I'll read you the second one, then we'll look at them together. I am in some warm place where rich people live, like Southern California or Hollywood. I'm sitting in this expensive home looking at a woman's book of work samples. I think it is the home of one of the lawyers I work with, and the woman is his wife. Now, she wasn't a lawyer, but she worked for a support firm, so to speak, for lawyers. I am surprised she is an artist. She paints decorative murals in a fresco style on people's walls. She does other interior decorating type things too. I am back out walking on the street. It is kind of barren looking. Even though it is warm, I am covered from head to toe. I notice I am wearing a dark green scarf that the artist woman made. She partially cut out the leaves so they fleck out on the scarf. I love the way it looks, and I think how simple it is, and that I could do that. I notice the scarf as I am entering a very nice restaurant. I wait to be seated, not realizing the hostess told me I could sit anywhere. Still, I want her to seat me. I see a table with my coworkers. I try to sit with them, but they didn't leave a seat for me. Someone gets up to leave, but someone else sits down immediately after them. I get the feeling it's being done on purpose because they don't want me to sit there. I feel a little sad and rejected. The hostess seats me at a very long, skinny table with strangers. I notice there are a few empty seats, but I am seated between a young teenage boy to my left and two younger children, a boy and a girl, maybe 8 or 9 years old, to my right. I do not want to sit with strangers, and I am uncomfortable about it. Still, I manage to greet everyone with a hello as I sit down. Now, that's just blah, blah, so far. But here comes the important thing. Then I am on another planet. Now, think already how that could be a reference to Sophia. What is the Earth? What's the planet? You see, you've got two circles here. So she's gone from one mandala to another mandala in our previous metaphor. So she is attempting now to look at this other dimension. It is very dark. Well, we've seen that before, right? Tom Cruise is there. Tom Cruise would be her heroic strength. A voice of some authority is telling him that his wife, as she always was, is with him, and their daughter is to work with fire. See, that would be the emotional dimension of understanding this knowledge. Now, here's the punchline. Let me back up. A voice of some authority is telling him that his wife, as she always was, is with him, and their daughter is to work with fire. It was written a long time ago. So that's the Sophia aspect, that she's approaching a process which has already been written, and it's an ancient process, and that is the a priori nature of her identity. Then I see him in the distance boarding a plane with his wife. She looks like the singer Avril Lavigne, and she's wearing wings like an angel. Well, let's start with the second one. The second one, the first 1, 2, 3, 5 paragraphs are all the meaningless jockeying for position and professional machinations that made up this woman's life, which she was sick of. So she goes to this other planet, to the transcendental dimension in the way we framed it. She meets there Tom Cruise, which is a positive animus strength, a positive male strength, a heroic strength of her to accomplish this task of understanding what she really is. And the voice of some authority is, again, that the authority of that transcendental dimension, is telling him that his wife, as she always was, is with him, and their daughter is to work with fire. So to recover the feminine Sophia dimension, she's going to have to go through emotional fire. And it was written a long time ago. That's exactly what we've been talking about, this a priori nature. Then I see him in the distance boarding a plane with his wife. So in the dream, they're coming back to the Earth. So there's been a sent to understand who she is, and then they're bringing it back to time and space. She looks like the singer, she, Cruz's wife, Avril Lavigne. I don't know Avril Lavigne. Maybe some of you do. But I asked her for associations to Avril Lavigne. She says she's a complete bitch. But see, that would be the positive strength, the positive strength to be negative in a way that supports yourself, which the dreamer needed, which we saw in the salmon, which we saw in the hoodlums. Here, that bitchy side is present and necessary. And she's wearing wings like an angel. So she's in the service of the spiritual journey. Now, let's go back to the first dream. As I say, these dreams were one night apart. And what do you make of the fact that this guy pulls a diamond out of the dreamer's vagina?
That's her jewel. That's almost her spiritual self.
Why was it in her vagina?
A place of creativity where it can be born or something. It's like she was giving it away.
Yeah.
She didn't feel like she had any femininity, and she realized through that affair that
exactly.
She had.
See, the unconscious is condoning adultery. That's what's so amazing. When you get into the Sophia dimension, everything twists and turns. This is one of the things we'll be looking at. When I say Sophia is of matter, I mean Sophia is of matter. Not some sanitized Sunday school version of it. But what Sophia is asking, or what Sophia puts us into, is a lot of messy situations.
So it's really condoning her to experience her femininity.
Well, it's condoning her having had that affair. And it is saying, as I understood it, something valuable has come out of that sexual experience. Very valuable. Now, you don't understand exactly that it's Sophia here, but when you see the next dream, then I think you can see that what that diamond represents is the value of the knowledge that Sophia represents. But it's also interesting, the unconscious, as I understood it, condoned the affair. Of course, she felt terrible after it was over. Oh, I wrecked the family. And, you know, the problem is, if you're going to do this Sophia thing, it is really hardball. And so I had to tell her I thought that guilt was ridiculous. I can assure you, if the unconscious feels what you have done is wrong, it will tell you. And you see it in the next image. The next image, the man pulls out one of these disco balls with many faceted mirrors. Now, after this affair, the dreamer was both feeling guilty and met another guy. I thought, well, maybe I will have a second affair. But see, the second affair then would have been that narcissistic display. It would have been just the glitter of the thrill of the chase and the seduction and the pleasure. That, the unconscious says, is wrong. You can do it once, but you can't do it twice, in her case. So what we are dealing with when we're working with this Sophia material is I would prefer to say higher, some people might say lower, I don't know, a higher level of morality, in which you are asked to go through certain things. She went through that affair. She learned both what it was like to be loved as physically as a woman, to be appreciated for her physical beauty. She also realized what love was, and that she was working in a position that was filled with power. And after this dream, shortly after this dream, she quit her job and is now going back to school to pursue work, which is education for work, which she feels more meaningful. But the Sophia aspect of the experience is that it came to her, this knowledge came to her through a mistake in the physical world, mistake in quotes, through a sin if you have a religious conscience. I don't particularly have one. But it was something that normal morality would condemn. And yet it is not at the same time just saying go out and do anything you want, because the next image that comes along and says, if you do this again, it'll be an Epcot ball with a bunch of flashy mirrors. It will not have the substance and value that your first experience has. So as we will see, Sophia doesn't come to us in moments of exaltation, generally. As you saw from my dream, it's the knowledge that comes to you when you're on the bottom. Or it's the knowledge that comes to you through the mistakes you make in pursuing the desires of flesh. When we say spirit and matter, we really mean spirit and matter. Sophia is your greater pattern, but it's a greater pattern that you can't get by living a sanitary life, but rather by throwing yourself into life, making mistakes from those lessons. Then she speaks and gives you the greater sense of your larger life. And it's 2:30. Any questions? Well, 2 weeks back at the church. And Nancy, thank you again for your beautiful space. We'll pick up with some more dreams next time, and then we'll move on to eventually the text.
Did you want us to read anything?
No.
I'm going to go to the next one.